For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Grip Block, Foundation Disc Golf Weekly Podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor and Connor.
Hey.
We've got quite the show going over the Dynamic Discs Open. A lot of storylines from this event. We'll update the Manufacturers Cup. We'll do a little Trevor's Trivia, and then we're going to do a top 10 update.
Or will we?
We will this time. I didn't plan anything after Trevor's Trivia specifically to make sure we got the top 10. And then we'll do the Silas Selects that Silas has totally selected so far. Right, Silas?
Silas?
Will you to say the Silas Select. We don't need it for like an hour, but just be on your toes. Hours go by quick in this office.
Heck yeah, dude.
But before we get into today's episode, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor, us. Today's episode is brought to you by Foundation Care. So if you don't know what Foundation Care is, basically it is now included on every purchase made in the USA over at foundationdisc.com and at our Lynchburg storefront. It covers your disc for 30 days. So what this means is when you shop with us, if you live in the United States and you shop with us over at foundationdisc.com and you buy that brand new Latitude 64 Brave, and you're like, man, I really hope this does blah, 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 blah to my game, and you spend, you know, $25 on it, before, that's an intimidating purchase, right? Because what if it doesn't flip? What if it flips too much? What if it's crazy overstable?
Yep.
What if you just don't like how it feels? Who knows? Now you're screwed. You're out $25, right?
Yes.
Wrong. That's where you're wrong, sir, because with Foundation Care, all you got to do is go to our site, scroll to the bottom. His little Foundation Care form, you click on it, you fill it out. You don't even have to have a reason for return. You just thought Silas might have just died over
Holy
there.
Cow.
You don't even have to have a reason. You just let us know what disc you want to send back, and you can exchange it for any other new disc
like,
on the site.
You'd be like, my tummy hurt, and we'll exchange it.
Yeah. And we'll send you a paid-for shipping label. No worries. You send it right back. You exchange it. New disc will be shipped to you. You have 30 days to use it, abuse it, however you want. Again, you just shop at foundationdisc.com or at our Lynchburg storefront, and as long as you live in the U.S., it's already included.
Holy
it's
cow,
already covered.
That was fast.
Wow. And it's in a Mott's assorted fruit. I think that means it's a Clash disc. We'll get back to it later.
Whoa.
What's a disc that you guys would have used Foundation Care on? I have one.
I would have kept getting Destroyers until one flew the way I wanted.
I definitely would have, when the like Berg first came out,
yeah,
definitely would have bought it had Foundation Care existed.
I probably would have.
Because I would have been like, everyone says this doesn't have glide, let me try it.
But you didn't want to commit to just buying it.
Yeah, no. And I'm glad I didn't because I don't like the Berg.
There you go.
Mine is like I was
you
looking
been cared
for. I was looking for a disc to replace like my Flippy Fairway, and I bought a Heat. And the Heat is a really, really good disc. So this is like a good opportunity for Foundation Care, but it wouldn't stay in my hand. It's like the way it felt in my hand, just it wouldn't stay in my hand long enough for me to throw it the right way. So I definitely would have used Foundation Care on that bad boy.
There you go. Well, this past weekend we had the Dynamic Discs Open. Results we had Calvin Heimberg taking it down.
Sir, I like to call it the glass blown open.
That's fine too. Gannon Burr coming second, Gavin Rathbun in third, and then on FBO side you had Missy Gannon edging out Haley King in a playoff, and then Emily Weatherman coming in third
Who?
Place. So let's talk FBO here first. Missy Gannon took down her second event of the year. This one happened to be in a playoff over Haley King. Not really a surprise, I don't think, to see Missy Gannon taking this down.
No.
When you consider especially the loss of Kristen Tatar, Evelina Salonen, and Hannah Blomroos to back to Europe.
Yep.
Owen Scoggins was the other player that kind of had expectations going like on her this weekend. She didn't really perform to those expectations. She still played fine.
I'd say
but
Holland also had some expectations.
Holland did as well, and Holland
she did okay. She
flashed up the leaderboard, but ended up just not doing it in the final round. But yeah, like I said, no surprise to see Missy Gannon. She was one of the people that was like on everyone's lips going into the season or going into this event. And she's been having a really solid season this far. Really, the only blemish on her season is a 22nd place at Jonesboro. But other than that, like we said, she has a U.S. Women's title. She has a major win now and a Pro Tour win. And yeah, it's just good showing from Missy Gannon.
Absolutely. Yeah, Missy has been solid this year. I expect her It's interesting, you know, I feel like she doesn't usually get off to this quick of a start, especially in the win category, because she has the major, right? She has U.S. Women's.
Sorry, yes, sir.
Right? Yeah. So she's got a major and an elite series, which is, I mean, already a great resume. And, you know, Kristen, does Kristen have three or four elite series?
Let's take a look.
I think
shall
she
we?
Only has three. Because if she only has three, then, like, you could say, like, they have pretty identical resumes. I mean, honestly, in some people's book, you would give the major champion the nod there. I can't remember if she
my
was
Wi-Fi
a fourth,
decided
though.
Just to stop working.
No. Mm. Yeah. How are we going to do our top 10?
Here we go. She's back. She's back.
We'd be toast if we can't do it. Does she have three or four?
Kristen Tatar has a win at Waco. She has a win at Play It Again and win at Music City. Three.
Okay. So she just has three. So that's what I'm saying. Like, Missy Gannett so far has, like, in theory, held pace with Kristen Tatar. Is that going to happen the whole year for her to, like, be able to win Player of the Year? I don't know. But, hey, you know, right now, Kristen's overseas. Like, this is her chance. Like, if she could, you know, get some more, because I don't think we're going to see Kristen for a little bit, right?
No. Yeah. We won't really see any of the European players for a little bit.
Right, because, I mean, are they just staying in Europe?
Well, actually, we'll see him at the Copenhagen, which is the next event, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, but, I mean, I, as far as, like, the
I don't know
events,
when...
Because, like, I don't think... I
let's
don't
look
think
at her
she's
registered
in Portland.
Events.
I don't think she's going to...
She comes back from Beaver State. Yeah, Portland Open.
Oh, okay, so she's just taking
oh,
a short
trip. Oh, she's actually
trip.
Just not even... She's not even playing over there.
Oh,
which
so
is
she was just taking a break.
She just
wasn't
took a
doing,
break.
She wasn't doing, like, the long European...
No.
Just, like, okay.
Yeah, because
oh,
also...
Sorry, Missy
the,
Gannon. Bad news for Missy Gannon, then.
That's interesting. So I guess the Copenhagen is... What is... I'm reading that right. That's COP. What else would that be? What is Missy Gannon's next registered event?
Well,
am I missing
the,
one?
That happens.
Yeah, OTB's the next.
That's because it happens during the off week before OTB.
Okay, but I'm just confused. It's a full Pro Tour event or it's a silver?
I think
they're
no silvers.
There's no, there's no. Events. There's
oh,
European
the European
silvers.
Events are silvers. That's right. Gosh, yeah. Man, it's hard to keep up. So they put them on that.
So
thing,
you still
I guess.
Have them on here.
Yeah.
Hate that.
I forget. So that's so, that's funny. The only silver events now are in Europe.
Yeah, but
crazy
like, why
stuff.
Does that
that's
even?
Crazy.
Why is that even listed on here?
Well,
anyways,
I thought Missy was gonna have a longer.
No, so
of time.
Kristen, as she of won't. Right now, will be back May 30th. So basically, you'll just have OTB Open
well,
is
hey,
the only one that's being missed.
Point still stands, though. Missy has held pace with Kristen so far, got a major under her belt. You know, if you get that second major and there's only, you know, two left to play for the women. So, like, if Missy's able to win one of those two, then Kristen's going to need a lot of other Elite Series wins to overcome that resume. And, I mean, Missy winning Player of the Year this year, I mean, I'm way ahead of myself, but that would just be crazy.
Well, Missy Gannon, as it sits right now, is actually in fourth in the Pro Tour standings, which obviously isn't always the Player of the Year
yeah, I mean, that's
determiner,
malarkey.
But because you got to look at Evelina Salonen also has a Pro Tour win and a major win.
That's a good point.
And has this
yeah,
overall,
that's a good point.
Just a little bit better season overall yeah. if you're looking at it. So she's in the lead right now at 778 points. Yeah. Kristen's in second at 743.
That's
and then
true.
Owen Scoggins is ahead of Missy at 731. But her only win being the Open at Austin.
Hey, say what you want about, and the last two FPO events have had great finishes in parity, so that's been awesome. But say what you want about the beginning of the season and like the events not being super close. But the win totals have been pretty exciting. I mean, having three players with like very on pace resumes this far into the season is great, and I hope they can keep it up.
Yeah. Now the player who you know would have been an obvious pick coming into this event, except for her consistent inconsistency, is Haley King.
Yeah.
So she was right back at it in this event again, and every time I watch Haley and she's playing good, it frustrates me because I'm like, why don't you do this every week?
Yeah.
Well, okay, well, here the funny thing about Haley's game is like I've also been in that crowd and said that, but I'm starting to think I just say that because she has really nice form, but yeah. like unfortunately, having nice form doesn't always produce just good golf, and I don't know that she just like even when she is like winning tournaments and like playing like at you know in this one she was in contention she still throws some real head scratching shots
but she just has like a like but she a has really a nice good form. Backhand
I,
and a really good forehand
that's what I'm saying it hypnotizes you I think because yeah.
well let me ask
you
this.
Watch it and you're like she's got like the best form out
when
there.
You see the player that you saw this weekend do you think that she should be capable of finishing outside the top 33 times this year
outside the top 33 times. No,
she has.
Of course not. Of
she
course
came
32nd
at Champions Cup, 32nd at USWDGC, yeah. and 42nd at
chess.com. Man. Back off.
But she goes 42nd at chess, and then she goes 4th at Waco.
Yeah.
Then she goes 32nd at USWDGC. Then she goes 10th at Play It Again, Jonesboro. Then she goes 4th at Music City. Then she goes 32nd at Champions Cup. and then she's in a playoff
that
here.
So I think crazy. I think she's in a I think so she's crazy. At a point in her game right now where
if she was a roller coaster ride, you'd get thrown off her G forces going up and down that much.
There you go. I think she's at a point right now where she is playing like the golf that she's playing. She needs to just try and dial in like a consistent. I don't know, like Missy Gannon. Say what you want about her game, but like her misses are usually pretty safe, and she just knows how to get the disc in play and have like this consistent right in front of her, like dead straight release over and over and over again. She doesn't try to do anything fancy. Like Haley King, I think it's difficult when you're capable of the shots that she is. I think that's what we see out of some of the upper level. I think that's what got to Paige, honestly. Some of these players that are capable of more advanced and extreme shots and further flying shots in the FPO division, I think sometimes that gets them a bit because you don't need them to win out there. You know, yeah. Missy Gannon played great golf. You know, I think she did really well C2 and C1 regulation. The putting was fine. It was better than Haley's. I think she led in C1 and C2 in regulation. But, you know, she doesn't do anything fancy out there. She's playing golf to keep the disc in bounds, get up and down when she needs to. Like, it's nothing crazy. And I think Haley, sometimes I just feel like I see lapses of concentration, too. Like, some of the shots, and we'll get into, you know, maybe the breakdown, but, like, her approach on 18 there, to like, that is an unexcusable mistake. Wide open hyzer, wind is down. You have acres of space,
just leave it
leaving
short.
It short. Like, that's what I'm saying. Is like, I think honestly, the mistakes I see Haley make more than any other player in FPO are mental errors and just not thinking through the shots enough. Being like there's just not a world where you can throw that disc short. I know she wishes she could have that back and is probably thinking the same thing. Like, how did I just do that? But like, that thing needs to be like landing at the basket or beyond it. Cause at least if you go long, you have those rocks to hit into.
Yep.
There's nothing short. So like, I just couldn't even believe that. And you just see shots like that. And then, you know, she saws off the one in the playoff on 17, you know, goes OB on that hole as well. And like, there was just like mistakes that just kept piling up where I was just like, these are just like lapses in concentration and just shots that are like, you know, I don't want to use myself as an example, but like there are sometimes where you throw a shot and you look back at it and you're like, if I had just focused a little more, like the miss is so severe that if you had just at least focused a little more, you may have still missed your shot, but not in a way that was going to punish you that brutally. And sometimes the misses out of her IC, I'm just like, man, like I just don't, like, did that disc just slip out of her hand or was she just not, you know, getting in the moment enough and really thinking through her shot and her release? Because that's what it comes down to. I mean, she has all the talent. We've been saying this forever, and it's just over and over. You know, she has plenty of talent. I still think her putting is very streaky, and that holds her back. I think she lost strokes to the field putting.
She did.
Yeah. So her putting is not quite there. But I think if she could just learn how to play a cleaner game, you know, and she's not the player that Simon Lizotte was. I wouldn't make them a direct comparison either. But, you know, it's kind of a similar idea where it's like, maybe just dial in the game a little bit, try and just smooth the disc out there and see what happens. But I also know she's struggling with some injuries. I don't know what's completely going on, but man.
I just remember whenever we filmed that video with Haley King a long time ago, years ago. And I remember thinking a similar thing that I thought whenever we filmed videos with Gannon a long time ago, which is like, wow, this person is going to be like a top player, like
she's
pretty
super talented.
Here.
Super
because
talented.
Just
very
watching
athletic.
Her throw, I mean, I think we filmed at Sandusky, and it's just like she was just throwing so
golf
many like really good
game,
forehands
man.
And just really good. She just played really, really
well.
It'd
be a weird game.
The interesting thing, first off, for our headphone users, they're going to kill you if you keep slapping the table. Been some comments.
Did
about
I do it just now?
Yeah. You talk with your hands a lot, which is a great thing.
Okay.
But with these mics, not a great thing. So
I'm
just,
sorry, guys.
You're welcome,
sorry,
headphone
keep
users.
Keep it up here, Trevor.
I interpret. Yeah.
Okay.
Interpretive dancing above your head is good.
Okay.
It also engages the visual.
Can you give us an example, Trevor?
Yeah. Like,
it might be better if I just keep them at my
that
side.
That works too.
Because I don't think I'll be able to control myself.
I'll keep my hands up here.
Fair enough.
But
like, so you guys don't want me to do like that?
I'll just like intercept it next time.
Is that what you like this?
We just cause someone to wreck by slapping the table and yelling in their ears while they're driving. If you're driving with headphones on, it's against the law. So take him out, first off.
Good point, Hunter. Yeah.
Secondly, I'm sorry that we just called you to wreck. I hope you're okay.
But you deserve it.
But you deserve
I didn't say that. Looking at Haley King, though, I think that when I almost group Haley into a similar but different game, as you see Holland Hanley, I think, falls into this trap some, and Ella Hansen, where
there's
when
a bunch
they
of them.
Are capable of the distance and stuff, it almost lures them into biting off more than, like, Missy Gannon just sometimes doesn't have the distance to even be tempted by what a Haley King or a Holland Hanley or them can be. But the interesting thing here is Haley King led the field in 3 stat categories, whereas Missy Gannon led in 0.
Oh, she didn't lead in any.
Didn't lead in a single one. Missy Haley King also gained 6 strokes tee to green on Missy Gannon, only lost 3 on the putting green, but she lost an additional 4 to OB strokes, which was big out here, taking 12 OB, whereas Missy Gannon took 8. Also, if you're on the PDGA site and you're wondering why they don't have OB, like I have multiple times, you just got to scroll sideways. It's there.
Oh, that's funny.
I was like, how do they not have OB? That's so important. And I scrolled.
I think on
right
my
there.
Monitor, it's big. It's big enough that it just shows up.
Oh, now we're going to flex your monitor
size.
It's
not even mine.
Wow.
Just borrowing it.
Unbelievable. But the other thing that I'm a little confused on, this is a complete side note, is Haley King gained C1X, is she lost 1.9 strokes, okay? Missy Gannon lost 1.6 strokes to the field, right? But Missy Gannon only putted 59%. She went 22 of 37, whereas Haley King went 25 of 38, making 3 more and only 1 more attempt. So how did she lose more in C1X?
Does it depend on what hole you're playing on? Because, like, if a hole...
Well, it shouldn't, right?
If a hole is, like, averaging a certain amount under par and you...
But that shouldn't matter because you're talking C1X putting.
I do not know how they calculate it.
That just doesn't make any sense to me, right? Well, like, am I missing something?
I don't know.
Does it confuse you, too? Missy Gannon putted 59%. So she went 22 for 37.
Missy Gannon putted worse.
But it got...
But gained... More strokes to the field, C1X putting.
Correct.
Yeah, that doesn't add up to me, Big Hunt.
Because she went 22 of 37, whereas Haley King went 25 of 38.
I don't know how the gain to the field thing, I don't know how they calculate that. So that's where I would, like, that's what I'm saying. Does it relate to what hole you missed a putt on and how hard that hole was playing to the field? Or
maybe it's like a combination of, like, circle one and regulation. But even Haley King beat her in that. Haley King beat her in that.
Do we need to call for?
I don't know. I don't know. I just was looking at that and I thought it was interesting.
We need to figure it out.
Back to the notes here. The other more surprising thing on the leaderboard was the performance of Emily Weatherman. Not a name that you probably heard before.
Sure
if
haven't.
You did, the only time you would have was Texas States when she came in 8th. But I hadn't heard her name before. That's her only finish inside the top 20 before this was Texas States in 8th. She has been touring this year. Just has been kind of all over the place, just not really been consistently towards the top, but she looked very solid out there. Her putt looked very good. She didn't really seem to get too nervy. I think she had Robert Burridge on the bag, funny enough, which that might have helped her, but she's been touring, so I don't think that, like, she needed to adapt a tour. But what is unfortunate is she had one of the closest OB calls on 18 that ended up, we didn't know this at the time it was made, but it ended up keeping her out of the playoff. Had it went her way, she would have been in this playoff. We only had one camera angle.
Wasn't good.
You don't know because we only had it from, like, down the line to the side. But, I mean, it was one of the closest I've ever seen because, obviously, the line is OB.
All over it,
and it was all the way across the line, touching the very end of the line. So you just couldn't quite tell, does the lip come over by even a millimeter to make her inbounds?
The problem with this one is, like, obviously, since we weren't there, it can't, like, you'd have to get on top of this thing to have, like, to be able to, like, make claims about it. So really the conversation only can be about what surrounds this circumstance. A, and we know this, paint is a terrible marker of out of bounds, right? This is why it's a bad marker of out of bounds, because you can have stuff like this happen when you've got blades of grass going every which way, and it's like, do I see one white blade of grass on this side of the disc or not? I mean, it's kind of crazy. And then number two, the idea of, you know, self-officiating. I think this was an interesting one because obviously she was on Chase Card, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, the people that are playing with her now, they're all competing for cash, and that's important, but it's not like she was on Lead Card where it was, you know, they're looking very much directly at her as the competition to win at that point. But, you know, it seems like all the competitors go up and very quickly call it out of bounds. Like, it didn't seem...
They thought about it for...
A little bit.
But we were also watching it cut together where we were watching lead card, and then so yeah, we don't know how much of what was going on they showed us.
And my thing is, I don't... Like, looking at it, from the angle I looked at it, if somebody told me you have to make a call, like, I probably would have called it out because I just can't. I can see that the disc is laying mostly, you know, the edge is laying mostly on the painted line, and I can't tell if on the other side. So I would probably have to say it's out. But I think the biggest thing is, I don't know. It's a weird one with the self fishing because she made a case for it, and the players around her pretty quickly shut it down. And I would just be curious to know, like, I just can't really get in on this because I couldn't see the disc. Like, was the case that she was making for it being in, like, did she see grass? And, like, if I had looked at it, could I see, oh, there was a reason? Or was it, because it could also be, and I don't want to, like, this is all speculation, but it also could be a case where she was desperately trying to get a call, brought something up on a whim, like, you see that blade of grass, and all three of the people were like, no, come on now, that's out. Like, that absolutely could be the case.
It seemed like a lot more conversation than that. From what I remember, they showed us at least a minute of back and forth.
To me, it just seemed like, regardless of the back and forth, it just seemed like the players that were calling it out were sure that it was out. They didn't seem like... I don't know, because like if there's uncertainty, you feel like that's when
Terry
you get an official involved.
Terry Miller seemed like he was very unsure which way. Yeah, well, and he was right on top of it.
Well, he was standing like 5-6 feet. That's what I'm saying. Like,
but he got right up on it when he did. He immediately was like, "I don't know. That's gonna be a very close call." And then they cut away, and they came back when the whole group was there, and he was like holding his mic and looking. And then, to me, if I'm in the opposite boat, if I, from the angle we had, was forced to call it one way or another, I would have called it in because there wasn't enough convincing evidence to prove otherwise.
Well, you could say
you couldn't prove it either way. Okay, if I can't prove it either way, the rules go, if it's very uncertain, right, then I would have said I'll leave it to the card mates, and everyone should have, and then it would have been benefit to the player at that point.
If the card mates are uncertain.
Me being uncertain doesn't mean benefit
to
the player.
That's why.
But to me, it wasn't clear enough that I could have made a call.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, I said, if I had to make a call, I get that line of thinking, I guess. And like I said, I
Because like
no
if it's
idea.
Not clear enough for me to make a call, then it should have been, I would have just been like, I don't know, I can't make a call. And if everyone said that, it's inbounds.
I would just be, that's why I'd want to know what it looked like, because you would think if there wasn't something, like, they must have seen white on the other side of the disc, like white paint.
But that's what also
for them
sucks.
All to be like, which I know and I understand that is still ridiculous, that like blades of grass.
I was gonna say, because we just bend it,
getting
and
bent
then,
in a certain direction. Like, it is still, that is the root of this thing, is like, if you had a line of string, this would have been a much easier call.
Oh yeah, there's
the paint thing stinks, but like, yeah, I don't know. The fact that they were all willing to make the call, I don't know.
It even could have been, one person might have said, I don't know. She obviously would have said for it. So then if the other two are like against it, that's all it takes.
Yeah, yeah. I'd have to watch it back.
Like, if the one
I know
person
I saw
said,
multiple players be like, yeah, it's out, but I didn't. Yeah. I don't.
Well, it had to be the majority for it to move on. I definitely would have liked, you're on 18, tournament director's got to be close, or at least a marshal. I would have at least liked an official to come over, only because, like, we're talking the difference in this case. At that time, it seemed like the difference between second and third.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know Haley King was going to bogey hole 18. I think this was going down I'm trying to remember exactly when it was going down, but it didn't feel like it was make or break for her in the playoff at that exact moment. No. But I still would have liked it to have an official. But looking back, this was the difference between her being in this aggregate playoff with Missy and Haley and her not. And like, you really would have liked it, an official to have made that call for that reason alone. Is like, at least then you know there is no bias, because like,
well,
there is a difference. You don't know for 100% certainty what went on the rest of the round, as if like, because there could have been the opposite way where it could have been a pretty clearly out, but everyone's best friends and they're like, oh, we'll give it to you. Also wrong.
Even if you had an official, there still can be bias, but at least when it's an official, it's a lot less messy because you can look to the official instead of having like, The environment of the self-officiating is always going to be weird, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, a lot of times you're going to fight this conviction to make a call on somebody with the fact that you're friends with them. And then like, what if, okay, if I make this call, the problem is I know these other two girls aren't going to really be fair about it because they don't like there is a lot of dynamics going on. So the official, you know, regardless if that official is the biggest Emily Weatherman fan ever, and he is going to show bias, at least at that point,
it's on someone
nobody
else.
Really knows about that, and it's on somebody else. Like, it gets it out of the playing field and takes that responsibility off of them. Because, yeah, and here I am. I'm touching the table again. You guys got to do better at that.
I warned you. That's all I could do.
Trevor, you got to remind me. It's
Trevor,
a habit.
No.
Yeah, it's a, come on now. You know,
can we make the table shock?
Habits,
no,
yeah.
Make the table sticky. So if his hands go down, it's just
they
super
stay
glue.
Down.
And
habits.
He can't.
You guys ever read Atomic Habits? You can't destroy them with one warning. You've got to beat me. Okay. I'm pretty sure that's what it says in the book.
I don't remember that part.
That's what it says in the book. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing.
I mean, if Trevor touches the table and I just deck him,
no, I deserve it. I think there should be pain associated. I believe in that. I think
Can we give Connor an airsoft gun?
Yeah.
You touch the table,
shoot me right in the leg.
We sure can.
At me. You can say what you want about the OB call, though, the whole time. Yeah. But at the end of the day, she did throw a bad shot.
Yes.
It was very bad, sawed off, you know, skipped up the hill. So when you're a player, and I would hope that Emily, you know, is a player that would look back at that and be like, you know what? Tough, tough break. But at the end of the day, you got to put the disc in the fairway.
Yeah. Like, if the disc is 2 inches closer to the fairway, it doesn't even matter. Yeah,
I mean, when you put it on the line like that.
Also, still a big moment for her career because still top three at a pro tour event. Yeah.
Great finish.
So realistically, she might have made the aggregate playoff and finished in the exact same spot she was in.
It's true.
Could have happened. So it doesn't matter. Now let's talk about this playoff. What did you think about doing the aggregate playoff style here?
So I saw a lot of people, this is a very like controversial topic in golf, because I saw a lot of people, Robbie C like texted me right after and was like, debate night topic. Why would anybody ever want aggregate playoff?
Interesting. Okay.
I think here, let me read his exact quote. I don't want to do him injustice. Just know, Robbie, whenever you text me, it's on the record. Debate night topic. In what world is going to an aggregate playoff better than sudden death? So that to me,
in
sounds,
this world, to me,
that sounds like he is. So the first time I ever even heard of the aggregate playoffs is the PGA Championship and the Open Championship both employ aggregate playoffs. And the PGA just recently started doing it, I believe. I think the Open's done a little longer. But there are a couple schools of thought to this. Number one, the good thing about this is a playoff is the most... We talk about trying to extend the drama on 18, right? Because it's the most pinnacle, exciting moment. It's the climax of the event. So the playoff is like that times two, and now we're taking that, we're stretching it across three holes. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the danger of the playoff? The danger of the three-hole playoff is that you can basically turn a close finish into a not close finish if holes, especially if the first hole goes really bad for a certain player. Now, let me give you another huge pro for the aggregate playoff. If you're a course that has a really awesome lineup of holes and you're like, you know, you can set your playoff lineup however you want, but if it's sudden death, you might not get to them. Now you get to showcase different holes with different parts of your game. And a good example is this course has a pretty good hole 18 and a good hole 16, and you get to use them both. You know, so like I think that is a huge pro for this, is you do get to use, you show off more of your course. But like I said, I think the only con in my mind, and people get really obsessed with the sudden death thing, and it is exciting. It is. One sudden movement could end the tournament. But sudden death too can be over really fast. So I think that this playoff does work. I think the only con is like the idea that the first hole especially goes super poorly, and then you're just playing two holes that aren't like super meaningful. But even that isn't super likely.
Well, this is why I loved it for this event, is because we've seen playoffs here before, and the tough part is you want to use hole 16 in the playoff. Right, yeah. So you send it there first.
It's going first.
First person goes in the water. Yeah. Second person sticks on the island. It's over.
Right,
and just like that, it's all deflated.
Yeah.
It's done. In this, with this hole 16, and in an aggregate playoff, like the biggest stroke separation you could really have is a 2-4.
Yeah.
Because why would you run that putt in an aggregate playoff? Right. There's still two holes to play that are very tough.
Yeah.
So it's far from over.
Which, speaking of putts, we got to talk about that missy putt. On
yes.
16.
Yes.
Holy cow.
But yeah, I
think you're on the right track.
As soon as I heard aggregate playoff, I said, this is perfect. I love this.
I think you're on the right
track. Because it guaranteed, because even down to hole 18, right? How it ended up working out is you had them both birdie hole 16.
Yeah.
Then you had Missy birdie, Haley bogey hole 17. So there's two strokes going to 18. Not over.
Not over. No.
Not over at all, because you had possible OB drive, and then you had someone could have went for it, someone could have not. We just saw Haley King bogey hole 18, if Missy Gannon would have bogeyed to Haley's birdie, yeah. then you go to the sudden death after that, and we would have went back to hole 16. With the, so, like, to me, this played out perfectly, and they're really, the only way it wouldn't have is if it would have went bogey to birdie, back to back, and it's four strokes into 18. Then it would have been over, but at least then you have 18 as the finishing green, so you're not finishing on 17, and, like, half the gallery walked, half the gallery didn't, whatever.
I think you're totally right. I think what happened was they were like, we want 16 to be featured, but the drama ends too quickly, like almost most of the time.
Yeah.
So they're like, how do we feature 16 as a playoff hole, but you know, keep the drama going? So I think that's exactly right. And yeah, I like it. I think sudden death, like, I don't want them all to be aggregate playoffs.
No.
I think it's something you sprinkle in and you do it at the right courses, right? Because if this was the Open at Austin or some course that maybe isn't full of iconic holes that we really want to see in a playoff, then just, you know, do the sudden death, you know, especially when daylight comes into play, you know, that's when it's like, okay, we really need to do sudden death. But like, imagine going to USDGC and the playoff is like, you play like 17, like you can grab, like you grab five or something, or you go 17, then one, like you grab multiple iconic holes that are really exciting and pair them together. I do think it is very interesting. And it's especially interesting too, when you have more than two people to play off, because then you get even like this, like,
because, like, if Emily,
this mini round of disc golf,
if Emily Weatherman would have been there, it'd been electric. But yeah, no, so Missy, so during the normal round, you had the whole lead card miss the island, if I remember correctly. They all go, well, no, Lisa Fakis threw the layup shot,
Fakis laid up,
Lisa threw the layup shot, which is a whole different thing, but anyways, they all go to the drop zone, all take fours. Then you get to the playoff, Missy Gannon does the exact same mistake. Turns a disc too much. I'm like, what is she doing? This time it hyzers back in, gives her a 40-foot death putt at the water. Remember, aggregate playoff. So was there a reason to run it? Absolutely, you're in a playoff. Was it a must make? No. Haley King gives herself a 25-footer, right? Also on the island, which means also a
death
putt.
We got to talk about one other thing. This is something I saw a lot of people talking about on Reddit. On 16 in the playoff, Missy shot, which lands in...
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Not called inbounds by the spotter.
It was called, they didn't know.
They called it, and so Brian was like pretty upset about it, because like if you look at it,
it's very clearly in.
It's very, very clearly in. And obviously, by not knowing if it's in or out, is that going to change Haley King's process on the tee? Probably not. Probably not, because no, she can't risk it, you know, being inbounds and not going for it or anything. But Brian was pretty aggravated with the spotter, and then the spotter actually posted on Reddit and was like, hey, I was a spotter. He was like, we were told if anything was close to just to not make the decision, you know, stay out of the way, like don't be the hero type thing. And it was funny, like Missy went in there and like was like, hey, like thanks, thanking the guy, like trying to like cheer him up a little bit. But like it is, and it is a tough one. It's a tough one when like, and nobody wants to get called out in the commentary like that.
Well, I think if you're the spotter on that hole, right, because Missy's disc very clearly inbounds, but was straddling the line, right? Mm-hmm. I've seen this before with spotters where like, every call he's had to make so far, and he's not even making the call, every flag he's showing, Probably 99% or lightsaber. Probably 99% of them that he was showing were this disc is in the water.
Yeah.
This disc is on the island.
Right.
This is probably one of the only ones he's seen where it's straddling. And I think sometimes, like, either A, they aren't really trained to know that disc is definitely in bounds, or B, it's a panic moment.
I could totally see the panic.
I don't want to wave green and Missy thinks she's in. Or I wave green and then Haley, like, feels like she has to get, like, you don't want to be the cause of that. So you see it and it's like, you start questioning everything you know.
When you think about it that way,
I mean, I'm going to just put both up because then I can't be blamed.
Yeah.
If it's out, it's out. If it's in, it's in. I'll let them call.
You're right. When you think about it that way, like how scary it would be making calls in big moments like that and you're a volunteer spotter. Yeah. Like, because like, if he calls that wrong, it probably ruins the tournament.
If a disc splashes in the water, like, duh, red. Mm-hmm, if a disc is sitting on the, duh, green. But like, if it's like half and half, like I'm not, I mean, I would because like, I've played disc golf and know I've been a TD enough that like I know that's in. I'm not questioning it.
Yeah.
But like if I'm just a volunteer spotter that this is how I want to watch some disc golf and all of a sudden I'm making a crucial call in FPO.
In like a really important moment. Like
and I'm on coverage of like
scary stuff, man.
Both up. No chance. Like I'm not calling that.
Keep that lightsaber away.
Well, especially if they told them to like do that if it was close.
Yeah.
Then
I don't think it, again, aggregate playoff, I don't think it changed Haley's play.
No,
you went for the island every time. Like he was terrifying to lay up. She also birdied it.
Zero.
But I'm saying
overall,
it's terrifying to do that layup shot that Lisa Fakis did during the round. Like that was almost more scary. You had to cross the water twice. Yeah, cross the water to layup, and then you got to cross the water. Like
I think it's just players who know they have to throw really hard to get to the island.
That's what in the commentary they were saying.
Oh, what do we think about Big Germ on the mic?
We'll get there later.
Okay.
In the commentary, yeah, well, of course I do. In the commentary, because also you had Sarah Hokum on the mic for the first time.
Yes.
I thought she did good. I thought it was Zoe Andike
when
I was just
listening. We'll get that later.
No, I don't have that topic.
Oh, I thought she did good as well then.
Yeah, I thought it was Zoe Andike when I was first listening, and then it like cut, and I was like, why'd they bring Sarah Hokum in? I was like, oh, that
people
was Sarah Hokum
her.
I was listening to.
People liked her, yeah.
She did good, but yeah, down the stretch, very exciting finish. The final thing to talk about in this playoff was during the playoff on hole 18.
Crazy moment.
We saw Haley King attempt to call a foot fault on Missy Gannon's approach to the green. Yeah. How did you interpret this situation?
I interpreted it as frustration. I don't even like, she was like, I mean, I even if you get the foot fault there, like, is it even going to matter? I don't even, like,
it wouldn't
have.
She was down two.
That's what I mean. So,
it would have made it where Missy had to make her putt.
Yeah,
I think
it was not a foot fault. You know, she planted well in front of her disc, centered on her disc, and which is funny because if you look at her approach on 18 in the actual round, I think she stepped like a little to the left of her disc. Like you could have even argued that one more. but yeah, she plants behind her disc, centered on it, and then pivots and then like slightly bumps it a little bit
after
the disc was out of her hand. And I've said this before. On this, but like if you are calling a foot fault when somebody, even if somebody steps on their disc and just like the very edge of their toe pops on it and you call that, I think you're being a little ridiculous. I think you're looking for scraps and like worry about your own game at that point. It's one thing when somebody blatantly gives himself an advantage and that's why you call a foot fault, but trying to call a game of inches when it's not meant to be called that way. The foot fault rule is meant to protect when you're doing a standstill lie and you're stretching, right, to be fair in that way. And it's meant to protect people taking huge advantages by being way behind their disc or way off to the left or what.
Good call,
good
Con.
Call.
Good
or
call,
way
Con.
Off to the right.
I think it did hit the mic, which might have been louder than him hitting the table.
Was.
But hey,
good
A
point.
For effort.
I've been elevated. Left to the lie or right of the lie. It's not meant to nitpick. If the rule was meant to nitpick, we wouldn't even allow run-ups in the first place because you could never be that precise.
Absolutely.
So Haley, and then what got me about it was Haley taking a tone of like, well, duh, with like Christine, who is there, being like, it literally went flipped up in the air. And it's like, I can't stand when somebody takes a well, duh tone with somebody and they're wrong. Like, if you were staring at it.
Well, I mean, it did flip up in the air. It just was.
Yeah.
The disc was 100 feet down the fairway.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it flipped up in the air after she pivoted. She was saying that she stepped on it and kicked it up. And that's not even close. Like, if you're looking close enough to make a foot fault call on that, you should know what happened.
Well,
like,
here's the.
It's like the caddy, like, tapped her on the shoulder.
That's
like, hey.
Honestly what I was about to say. I think that's what
like,
happened. Because
like, what in the world?
This is how I view it. First off, let me say this. I'm all for people calling rules. And I think that they should call rules, and I don't think it should be an awkward thing, right? Like, if a blatant rule violation happened,
that's
sure,
fine.
Call it. I'm not upset about her attempting to make a call. What I don't like about this one was how late it was called in this situation.
Yeah, another good point.
Because Missy's disc had landed. She had picked up her lie. She was taking off her rain jacket, walking away. That's how long she had.
Yeah.
And then the initial footfall call was made. Because you can watch this all in real time. You can also watch Haley King and her caddy are walking away after Missy's thrown and then come back to make the footfall call.
Yeah.
If you see a footfall, it happens before the disc is released. Yeah. Meaning that call should have happened while the disc is mid-flight.
Right.
It should have happened, footfall, because then you can't even be accused. Yeah. If that disc is halfway through the air, you don't know what's about to happen.
Right.
This was, the disc had landed, Missy Gannon had won, the tournament was over, Haley King walks up and says footfall, and then tried to like argue it a
now,
little
here's
bit.
Here's my question.
Because if you were watching it, what you had said of like, if you watch it close enough to see it happen, why would you wait 30 seconds right. to make
somebody
that call?
Somebody told her, I think. Well, here's my other question is, in a... And there might be a PGA rule on this. I'm sure there is, hopefully. In the two-person playoff, there should, in theory, there should be no calling, self-officiating.
No, I think you can call because you can self-second. So Missy Gannon could have said, I did footfault. That would have been the second.
Oh, well, that's the dumbest thing
I've
ever
heard in my secondary life. Thing is the official.
But the official, that's what I'm saying. Official should not be seconding. You shouldn't have to like get the official's attention to make a call. That's what I'm saying. If they're, in my book... If there's a footfall, the official should call it. That's the end of that.
That should. Yeah. There's not a rule.
Haley
King
shouldn't have to call something for an official to second it if there's an official on the card.
Shouldn't have to, but yeah. I think the official could have seconded it. But also, I think the reason is because Missy Gannon, you can second it as a player.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because you can, and it's happened before. Crazy, I'm pretty sure earlier. Don't quote me on this because there was a lot of FPO footfaults called on coverage, yeah. which was fascinating.
I love it.
But
I love
I'm pretty
a good
sure.
Football calling.
I'm almost positive one of them, Stacey Ronsley, called Natalie Ryan. And I'm almost positive Natalie Ryan seconded it and said I did and then took the stroke. And then what was interesting is like two throws later Natalie called Stacy and I'm pretty sure Stacy seconded it like I did and then just footballed it back and forth.
I'm gonna have to do something pretty egregious for me to self-second myself. Like,
well, if I knew
I'm gonna have to stomp flat
if I knew
disc.
I like stepped on my disc and my foot slid off and yeah. someone called, I'd be like yeah, I mean, because like, mm-hmm. but if I'm like rotate, you're not gonna notice.
Nah,
if you like
yeah.
plant and rotate and kick
sealed.
Your disc a little
I'm gonna
bit
make the rest of the card call it.
Wow. There it is, Trevor the cheater.
If I step on the disc, here's my thing about stepping on the disc. Listen, the rules are what they are, but if I don't think anybody in their life has ever stepped on the disc and then thrown a better shot because of it.
I had a friend
like,
who, like,
give me
every
a break.
Time he would throw, he would step on the face of the disc.
Now, I will
and
say this.
His foot would slip, and it's always so. It's like, that was like his plant
oh,
point,
I did it
was he like pivoted on his disc.
I used to do it more. You know, it's really funny. A lot of people are getting into disc golf, and like, and this was me too. When I first watch professional disc golf and I grew up playing a par 3 course, so run-ups to your lie were not really a thing at all. Mm-hmm. You threw standstills, so like the watching pro disc golfers run up and plant perfectly behind their lie over, I was like so
art.
Confused. I was like,
it's an art.
How are they doing that? That's impossible. And then you realize it's not that hard, but your margin for error is like a few inches here and there. But I will say, you know, a quick way to not step on your disc is to mark it with a mini, because it's a lot harder to detect
yeah.
if somebody steps on the edge of a mini.
And like what you guys were saying before, like the purpose of the footfault is to prevent somebody from getting an
Correct.
Advantage because
Correct.
They purposefully step somewhere other than their yeah. lie. If you're in the middle of the fairway, I mean, you're not getting
no,
an advantage. Like,
never.
No. Well, also, like, there was the one back in the day where Climo kept calling Stokely on a footfault.
Yeah.
But, like, in that scenario, Stokely was running up sideways and was planting, like, a foot or two behind his lie. Now,
yeah.
some of them, they weren't footfaults, and Climo just called him anyways. But,
yeah.
like,
well,
in that scenario, though, like, he's trying to throw a shot, like, a very tough, tricky shot,
mm-hmm.
and is blatantly ignoring his lie.
And
like,
you,
that's a completely different...
And you said
different.
It, though. It's a petty off is what it becomes.
Yes, because then at that point, once it was, like, a... How am I doing? The next thing you know, it's like, well, you better be within an inch of your lie or I'm calling a footfall.
Yeah.
And like, that's just where, I don't like when it gets to that. I'm all good with the first call of like, if my disc is here and I plant like 2 feet behind it and that, because that could open up a different angle.
Especially
could,
when you're
whatever.
Going over something.
Yeah, like
yeah,
I'm all for that.
There's
that's
context,
a footfall.
You know?
100% that's a footfall. Yeah. But if it's just like, I'm watching it just to try to call you just to get a stroke.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. you could do that all day
well,
long.
Well, because if you are actually like taking into account where your foot is planting, it makes the game harder.
Yeah.
It makes the shot more difficult if you have to be sure where you're stepping. So if you're showing no regard for the lie at all, then yeah, you technically have an advantage because you don't have the nervousness of having to figure out where your foot's going to go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is like a fine line.
I'll say, regardless of how it was brought up to her, because, yeah, there's a good chance that her caddy told her and then, you know, she just got caught in the moment, but it wasn't a good look. It looked pretty bad on coverage.
It looked like a very desperate
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying my last ditch ever to win when
you're,
I've got
when
beat.
You're losing and it's, like, basically over and you're playing that, like, that's...
Just take it.
Yeah, it's over.
It was tough. Now, over in NPO, we had Calvin Heimberg take down his first win of the year and his first win in 371 days, according to Statmando's Twitter.
Heck yeah.
He had a solid first two rounds, finished with an absolute scorcher, one off the course record that happened to be set that same round by Joseph Anderson, Joey Buckets. Ricky had a one-stroke lead over Calvin heading to the final day, ended up losing by seven
to
Calvin. It doesn't
tell
the full story. They were only separated by two strokes going into 16, and then we saw the break that I think broke Ricky.
I think it was three.
I did the math. It was two. I'm pretty positive. I just did the math. Doesn't matter. It was close. It wasn't over going into 16. Mm-hmm. But then you see Calvin's disc definitely looked like it's going OB. Hits the back wall on 16 and just gets a crazy reaction and roll to the middle of the green. Then Ricky throws a pretty similar shot, also over to the left. Honestly, might have even looked a little better. Hit the wall more square, rolls OB.
Tough.
And Ricky was, you could hear him on the hot mic walking off like, are you freaking kidding me?
He was just like, of course.
Like, of course that just happened. So he ended going bogey, bogey, bogey.
It's tough.
To Calvin going one under through those last three. So that would point to three strokes.
And there's a lot of people bickering back and forth online about Wallgate and the luck of it. And it's like, well, here's my point. If you're going to throw into a wall, you are subject to whatever happens after hitting said wall.
I would like the people who are upset by it to answer, do you think Calvin or Rick intended to throw their shot where it landed?
No, you want to,
don't think so.
You want to obviously not be that far left. And then also, these players, I think a lot of times play to slide into the wall. But,
yeah, but
I don't think any of them
are
really trying to hit the wall in the air. And yeah, I mean, was Calvin's reaction off the wall crazy? Some people were trying to say is because he threw a slower disc. I think that's even still like he definitely could have got a roll. But yeah, if you throw it and hit a wall in midair and you're already close to the OB and it wasn't a great shot, you are subject to
like
what
if
happens.
if you don't throw a disc where you intend to, that is when you bring luck into play.
Mm-hmm,
so like if both of them had threw it exactly where they wanted, both of them would have been fine. But once they threw it offline, then it became luck.
Yeah.
So both of them threw bad shots because they hit the island, but both of them threw not perfect shots, and so luck came into play, favored Calvin, didn't favor Rick.
As soon as you hit the wall at all, I don't even care if you slide dead center into the back of the wall. If that thing pops up and jumps over it, you've now brought in a part of the course that is unpredictable, more so than not. Like, it's not, you know, it is what it is.
Now, I took note of this because I don't believe it, but on the broadcast, they said this was the only the second time that Ricky has went into the final day with a lead and lost the event.
Ever?
That's what they said.
He did it at European Open that one year.
Well, see, that's what I thought,
so is that
too.
What they cited?
No, the other one was Champions Cup.
Well, that's got to be capped at.
But I'm wondering, was he not the solo leader going into the final day at European Open, maybe?
Was he tied for the lead or something?
I don't know.
All right, well, that's
they said it on the broadcast, and I was sitting,
was
it I was
2018?
Like, that's not true.
Was it
and I was like, maybe it is.
Was it 2017?
I don't know what year it was. I just know Paul chased him down from like 8 strokes back, and it was crazy.
Maybe he wasn't the leader. Maybe.
But I'm saying maybe he was in second and took the lead.
Okay, 2017.
Or something. I don't know. They said it. They said the only other time was Champions Cup when Chris Dickerson won.
It wasn't this year. Maybe.
That's what they quoted.
It might have been 2018.
But they could have also been talking in the Pro Tour era or something. I don't know. But they said that, and I was just like, that can't be true. But I was like, they said it on.
I'm saying there wasn't one in 2018.
They said it on the broadcast.
So it had to have been either 2015 or 2019.
Was it 2016?
Did they have one in 2016? They only
had
one every 2 years. No, they have one in 2017. That's what I'm saying. Okay, I think this is it. No. Because in the finals in this round, no, this is what tournament was this? It's like very popular coverage.
It could have been was it 2015 European Open?
No, I just looked it up. Look at the final rounds. It's not even.
But I'm saying, I wonder if the final round scores don't tell the story. Like if Paul came out slow,
no, but
Ricky
like
took it.
Rick played better.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
In the final round, in that one I was just looking at.
But that's what I'm saying, is like, I wonder if Paul got down by 8 or something and then stormed back. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think so. Oh my gosh. All right.
I don't know. I just know they said it on the coverage, and I don't think Ian Anderson would lie to me.
Paul won in 2019, but Was it 2019?
Paul won in 2017.
It wasn't 2017, though. Rick was, like, way off in that one. I mean, I should be able to look it up on YouTube, and it should be, like, the first... I mean, it was, like, the most popular disc golf YouTube video for a while there. Like, can you guys picture that thumbnail?
I don't know. Disc, I mean, I definitely watched it multiple times, because it was, like, one of the craziest
European
comebacks.
Like, I mean, I've seen this...
It was in 2019. Because it was well before that.
I'll know this.
I think it had to be 2015.
Man. I'll know it.
It was 2015.
It was?
I think it had to be. I bet Paul slipped during the final round and then stormed back to win by one. I bet that's what happened.
Hmm. Well, look, round three, look, he got crushed. So maybe it was that.
Paul had the lead, but then wouldn't... Yeah, because I don't think Ricky would have ever taken the lead.
Okay, 2015. You said this is 2015?
This is 2015 that happened.
Okay, this is round...
Because Paul lost two strokes to Rick in the final round.
This is final round front nine coverage. Okay, Paul's up by three starting the round.
Yeah, well, go to the end of the front nine.
Yeah, let's see where he's at. He is up by three. This is not it. It's 2017. It's 2017. Like, did Rick just, like, implode?
Could have
been. Okay, let's look at this. He wasn't even on the lead card for the final round in 2017.
Paul what wasn't, or Rick wasn't.
What is this tournament?
It was definitely European Open.
Rick wasn't.
It's definitely European Open. Right, Connor? You remember it. Dude, could it have been 2012? Could it have been like 2013?
Maybe it's 2013. It's 2013. Okay, this is it. This is it. This is the thumbnail I was looking for. Oh my gosh.
So dude, what happened then?
I was going crazy. Hold on, I'm finding the scores. Here we go. Okay. Nope, he's winning by a lot. It's not this one. Okay, it doesn't exist. Never happened.
No, it happened. Nope, we've
never
all
happened.
Seen it.
Nope, never happened.
Are we thinking of, like, could it have been Kona Piste or something?
No. Are we, like, all suffering from what's, like, that effect where you guys all, where everybody thinks something is true and it didn't happen?
The
Mandela effect.
The Berenstain Bears effect.
This is the Mandela effect. We're all getting Mandela affected right now.
I'll text Paul.
It's the Carbonaro effect.
If there's one person that'll know, if there's one person that'll know, it'll be Paul.
Hey, Paul, when's that time that Rick choked and be like, which one?
That's not what I'm going to ask him.
What's the spiral thing?
I mean, I just, like, I remember that so, I swear I've watched that. Or was it not Rick? Was it like Barsby?
No, it's definitely Rick.
I don't know, dude. They were going to put me in a home.
Trevor, you have no idea how long I was white-knuckling this Nerf gun waiting for you to touch the table.
It scared me to death, but I think that's good. I think you scared it out of me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw some crazy stats about Rick, because I think one of the stats I saw about Rick is, I think it was from 2011 to 2023, he's won at least one Elite Series major or national tour. So that's a pretty long streak. I mean, obviously, this is the beginning of the season. I'm sure Rick's going to win, but just something to keep an eye on. And Calvin just joined a pretty exclusive list of players that have won as many, like, Elite Series or higher events as well. I think it's, like, up to eight, and he's, like, with, like, Barry Schultz, Climo, Nate Doss, like, a pretty good list.
Yeah. So what now? Back to Calvin after that whole...
That was a rabbit hole.
I'll let y'all know if Paul texts me back. I don't know. But what do you think this win could mean for Calvin's rest of his season?
Well, I think this is perfect, because I love that he won the way he did, because I've been saying on the preview show and on this show, I've been waiting for Calvin to go out on a final day and take it. Like, I kept saying, like, we just haven't seen Calvin get out in the final round and just, like, go ballistic. And that's exactly what he did. He came out firing. He put his foot on the gas. I think he decided that he was not going to let this one slip. He was going to go out firing and playing aggressive golf. And, you know, if he lost that way, I think he could be at peace with it. And, I mean, he just dominated.
Yeah.
This was classic Calvin. This is the Calvin Heimberg that everybody watches and is like, oh my gosh, this dude's unbeatable. And I think this would be a massive, massive boost of confidence for him. I think he desperately needed it. You could tell he showed a decent amount of Calvin emotion out there. And that's, you know, that's always a scary sign.
Calvin emotion.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, he's on a different scale. But I love it for him. I'm super happy for Calvin. And I think that this is, you know, definitely not too late in the season to get something going. Not even close. So watch out for Calvin now, rest of the year. He's got one off his shoulder. It remains to be seen if he can get the major win this year. But
I think this is a fantastic time to get it done, and he's going to have a ton more opportunities, and I'm very glad that he won the way he did. I didn't want to see him win because other players, you know, just choked down the stretch. I mean, he just came out there and he shredded.
No, he just put his foot on the gas and just didn't take it off. I mean, yeah. he started 7
awesome.
For 7.
Yeah.
He just awesome. Came out and just opened it up, and then down the stretch he was never super challenged, but it was always like if he messed up, there were people waiting, and he just never did.
Yeah, he didn't.
He never did. He had one bogey on what hole was it? He like bogeyed 14, hole 13, but it was surrounded by 5 birdies. Yeah. He went birdie, 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 bogey, birdie, birdie, and then went par, birdie, par down the stretch to secure the win.
That's awesome.
Which the par on 18 was because he could lay up to tap out for the win. So very, very,
very
impressive.
Very big of him not to try and tie the course record.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine if he would have ran that, went OB?
It would have taken something.
Yeah, it would have taken something crazy. But no, I mean, hey, Joseph Anderson did birdie hole 18 to get the course record. So Calvin had a chance to tie it with a bogey.
True, true.
But it doesn't matter. Very impressive performance. And I do think this could be very big for his confidence. Yeah, because I mean, it when you're a player that plays at the level of Calvin and you go a year without winning, like, you have to at some point question yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Of like,
absolutely.
Like, how many times am I going to put myself in contention and not win? So to do it again and like do it in a pretty commanding fashion that final round, it should be, now the field should be really terrified because we've had Rick in contention multiple weeks in a row.
Yeah, Rick's
Gannon Burr,
the most due.
Gannon Burr finishing second.
Yeah.
He still hasn't finished outside the top 10.
Shot
AB has finished outside the top 10 once now. With the 14th place this weekend, so it's not like he did anything criminal. Calvin, you know, right back at it. Paul was in the mix, which we'll talk about Paul in 1 second here, but Paul was in the mix and then kind of like imploded a little bit down the stretch. But you have a lot of guys who are firing and getting hot at this point in the season. Like,
it's
if you're not on that list,
leading
it's kind
up
of
the worlds, baby.
If you're not on that list, it's kind of terrifying for you.
Yeah, I mean, the ocean of incredible talented golf that is surrounding the top of the leaderboard right now is horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, and hey, credit to guys like Gavin Rathbun who are playing golf this season really well and were able to, you know, get a podium finish. You know,
yeah.
Joey Buckets, who is continuously this year submitted his name up into the top 10 amongst this insane field. You know,
he
is a player that, you know, this is 5 years ago, he's winning events.
Absolutely.
Know, consistently. But yeah, I think Rick is now top of the list for most due for a win. But
I really thought this was going to be his weekend. But
it really looked like it. He came out hot the way he did, and you know, Calvin was always there. But the way that the season's gone previously, you thought Calvin's going to kind of slow up in the final round. Rick's going to do Rick things. That's it. And it was like, nope.
Yeah. Now, Anthony Barella, like I said, finished outside the top 10 for the first time this year with a 14th place finish, leaving only Gannon to have not missed the top 10.
Yeah.
As he notched a second place finish here. This did close the gap in the Pro Tour standings, only 5 points between Gannon and AB, but they are both clear 135 points of third, being Rick. So you have Gannon and AB within 5, neck and neck at the top, and then you have a 135-point gap to get to Ricky in third, which is kind of crazy that they've already separated themselves this much this early. Obviously, just one or two performances could change that, but it's looking like early a two-horse race right now.
Yeah, the top of the game is just really stacked up right now, and you've got, you know, a lot. I think AB, Gannon, Kyle Klein had another decent event. Dickerson's been playing really good golf. Like, there's just a really good group of guys that have been playing remarkably consistent golf. Because that's the thing that you strive for the most, you know, is if I'm not going to go out and be in contention, at least can I, you know, finish top 20, top 15, and keep momentum moving in the right direction. Because, you know, when you finish, and sometimes it varies, because, like, you know, there can be events where you can take 15th and be 15 strokes off, or you could be 7 strokes off the lead.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, you know, when you're not winning, but you're able to get yourself in the top 15, you can look at yourself and say, well, you know, it's a few strokes here, a few strokes there. Like, just wasn't putting my best this weekend. You can convince yourself that you are still right there and you're just this close. It's when you have that finish where you take a 70th, where you got to look in the mirror and be like, what just happened out there? And is it going to happen again next week? So I think when our hottest players right now are just staying right there, you know, they're just lurking, that means that they're not losing any steam. And at any given moment, they're going to continue to win. And I think that's a great place to be right now. With the last thing you want is all of the hot players to just cool off and kind of take time to get back into things.
Yeah, no, if anything, more people are heating up and getting to that hot player list, which is just crazy.
Especially with the major season really kicking in here.
Speaking of majors, it was also, we talked about Gavin Rathbun a little bit already. Very impressive performance from him. There's very impressive performance from a lot of people. But the one that kind of shocked me was Andrew Presnell. He hadn't finished inside the top 15 yet this year, and then won a major last event, and then finished top five in fifth, I believe, here at DDO.
Yeah,
not really a course that you would doesn't scream Andrew Presnell to you when you look at it.
Yeah,
but totally. He came out, and to me, how I interpreted this is that win took a lot of weight off his shoulders and added some confidence to where he's like
he's in a good mood.
Yeah, he feels like I know now I can compete with anyone. And you know, you saw him out here top five at a course, like I said, that I wouldn't, it's not a Prez course, but he on tour life admitted to only being able to throw like 425 to 450. Like that's just, this isn't a course where you
imagine only being able to do that.
Well, I'm saying this is a course where, cause Brody immediately was like, asked him about a few holes and Prez was like, yeah, I have to get a disc to flip up to reach those holes. And Brody was like, yeah, I think that's like that's where a big disadvantage comes because like in a wind, I can just rip a overstable disc, whereas Prez has to get something to flip and stand up.
Yeah,
and yet he managed it just fine and came fifth out here. Points to, you know, he was saying when Brody was asking him during that interview about like what he was thinking. One of the tournaments that he brought up that he thinks he had a chance at is Idlewild, which I think could be very interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
If Presnell stays really confident. You know, it could be very interesting if Presnell gets a major and a Pro Tour win this season.
That'd be
crazy, but it's not that unbelievable when he just came top five here.
Yeah, and well, like I said, you can't super argue that just like, well, he played safe golf thing, because like a lot of players weren't going OB a ton. You know, I think Calvin went OB like four times the whole event. You know, it's not like that was separating himself so much from the pack. I think he's just on cloud nine right now. I mean, he probably is going to get a massive pay raise. Even if it's just like a bonus of some sort.
Well,
right?
He's also, we have now confirmed, back on the elite team, and he's getting a Tour Series Swarm.
Exactly.
Which is the newest Discraft disc, overstable mid, in Z Flex jawbreaker plastic, and like with Presnell's, like that.
Yeah.
He's going to make sell some money. A ton of that.
So as I'm saying, I think he's in a really good mood. And, you know, shocker, golf's a mental game. When you're in a very good mood, you're going to play better. And yeah, I think he also he's figured out some things. He's gained some confidence. Another player who gained some confidence this week and who is the CEO of Idlewild, Isaac Robinson.
Yeah, he came in ninth place here, an important ninth place finish.
Yeah, including a very nice final round. So hopefully I love Isaac. I really hope he can figure it out and get back in the winner's circle at some point this year. I think he's just gonna have to pick his moment, but hopefully this is a confidence builder. His brother lost a bit of confidence in that final round.
Yeah, it was tough.
Oh, my goodness.
He was going in with a chance at the win. He had a lot of chances early for different birdie opportunities. He just kept squandering them, parring the first seven, and he lost seven strokes through those seven to Sir Calvin Heimberg on his card.
Can't do that.
And then went tripled bogey on 8-9. He ended up getting back to one under for the final round, but just wasn't his day out there.
Also, big shout-out to Mason Marshbanks and Evan Scott, who is currently second in the Evan Power rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a statement.
Wow. Where was Evan Smith out here?
Nope,
just Brody Smith.
No, he wasn't. Ooh, so maybe not as big of a statement as we thought. Evan Smith did have that ace last week at Champions Cup. So, like, the highlight reel really helps you in the power
it does.
Rankings.
Yeah. So now we can get to, what are your thoughts on Big Germ's live commentary debut?
Okay. So I thought it was pretty good. And I think a lot of people liked it. And here's my thoughts. I think that when you put him in the live booth, I've always thought Jerem's like a pretty funny, entertaining guy. I think in the Jomez commentary, and this happens with, and I'm not a huge Jomez watcher anymore, so I'm not like the authority on this. But I think sometimes he can get a little off tangent, lose focus a little bit, because, you know, they do that after long days. A lot of times it's post-produced commentary, you know, you do it. But I thought he was a little more locked in the booth. I think he took it upon himself to really be a professional and try and add to the group. And I saw on Reddit somebody said he's coming back for another event. I don't know if it was Portland. Which that'd be crazy because that's an Elite Plus. But he is coming back for another event, and I'm down for it. I think experimenting with new commentators, especially in the color position, is great. Obviously, he's experienced with Jomez, and I like Big Germ, so I'm down for it.
Yeah, I think he did a phenomenal job. Yeah. What I really thought was interesting, well, first off, let me say this. I thought it was really interesting, and I thought it added a lot to have two on-the-ground commentators.
Yeah.
They had Terry Miller and Brian Earhart. Now, that could have just been in defense because of how often Ian throws it to the guys to make sure someone was in position.
After every shot, basically. Yeah,
to make sure someone was in position. But, no, I thought it really added to the broadcast to have two guys, one with chase, one with lead, so that you always had context if something did happen.
Yeah, because they are, I mean, ultimately, those guys on the ground are vital with the coverage that we have right now. We need them. Yeah. So, yeah.
But, no, I thought Big Germ was great. My two highlights I wanted to bring up is, one, day one, Rick chains out for an ace on, I think, like,
oh my gosh,
three or something.
Dude. Wait, are we going to talk about the baskets?
No, I didn't have it. But Rick,
they were tough.
Rick chains out for an ace, and Germ, like, freaked out and got super excited, and he said something along the lines of, like, how it's so much more fun to commentate live because he had no idea that was about to happen. I was like, that is, like, the funniest comment.
Like, watching, like, a guy who probably, like, loves post-produce being like, oh my gosh, that's live? Like, that's what live is like?
He was like, that was so exciting. I had no idea that was about to happen.
It's just like I was on his card, like, watching it happen. Like, that's how it works.
I just thought that comment was
very
funny.
That is very funny.
The other thing I loved is he just stopped Ian mid-sentence when Ian was about to, it sounded like on the final day through seven holes, Calvin was 7 under through seven, and it sounded like Ian was about to be like, is Calvin just going to walk away with this thing?
So Jerem,
and he said, so Ian goes, man, Jerem, it almost seems like Calvin's about to, and Jerem goes, stop it. You stop it right now. We don't say anything like that till hole 16's over. And I just, like, busted up laughing.
Dude,
I was like, that was awesome.
I really liked Jerem.
I always Big Sexy, Big Jerem, Nate Sexton. I think there are two best color commentators in the game right now.
Dude, I like, give me like a Terry or Charlie Eisenhood with Sexton and Jerem, and then give me like Perkins and Earhart or Terry and Earhart on the ground. That could be my new power team.
I think that could be phenomenal.
I like to picture Ian Anderson's note cards as like, okay, stats, flips it, is it over yet? More stats, flips the next one, is it over yet? He has to keep like asking if the next guy thinks that the tournament's over.
Yeah. Ian, I think, could really add value to the production if he was like a graphics guy, or maybe if he was like the interviewer.
Yeah,
after.
Careful, man. There's a lot of Team Ian's
out
there.
Fine. I'm not one of them. I'm not a Team Ian. I love what he's done for the sport.
I think Ian's a nice guy.
I love Central Coast. I love everything he's done. He's not a live commentator.
I think he's a little too laid back for me.
He's not. It's just not my vibe. It doesn't work. And I find myself more distracted. I do think it was better, Ian and Jerem, than Ian and Philo.
Yes, but I think that Ian is significantly better when he's with Sexton, or in this case with Jerem.
Yeah, because I did find them like arguing less.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
You didn't really hear Ian make a statement and then Jerem go, I don't know, man, I disagree. You know, when I was playing against him, it blah, blah, blah.
That's
you didn't really hear
cheese
that.
Cheese on bread.
Yeah.
You know?
Here we go. We have a response from Paul.
Oh, heck
Paul said it was the year. It was an A tier. Eagle was actually winning. I'll find the year.
Oh,
there we go.
Eagle. So we're just idiots.
There's the answer.
Well, it still would have been one of those ones we looked at.
Well, I think Eagle was winning. So maybe he came back on Eagle over Rick, or maybe Eagle was winning and then he like stormed back. I don't know. But it was an A tier. So that's why we couldn't find it, because it was one of the years it still happened. So it probably was a 2016 or 2018. It was just an A tier.
They did it as an A tier in one of the in-between years?
One of the off years, because it was only a major every other year or something. Hmm. So there you go. And there's the answer.
Interesting.
Speaking of Macbeth, this is actually a great time to jump into it. We saw a little bit of the vintage Macbeth mindset on going for everything down the stretch with almost a like win or go home. And it cost him because he went double. Well, he went double bogey on 16.
Didn't he take like a 9?
He went quadruple bogey 9 on 18 to finish and come in at 27th instead of 11th had he parred.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Start out. historically, we've seen this out of Paul, right? Yeah. Where it's like, here you go. He linked it to me. It was a disc golf world tour event. That's why. And it was Rick that he beat out by two. So it wasn't Eagle. It was Rick.
Oh.
So there it is. Let's see who had the lead.
What was it called? Was it still called the European Open?
So Ricky did have the lead. Paul did take him down. So there you go. Maybe they were saying Elite Series and Majors. Yeah, I mean, that could have made sense.
It was an A tier.
But it was the Disc Golf World Tour. It was European Open Disc Golf World Tour number 3. So that's why it felt like such a big event.
Don't even talk. If you're such a European, if you're such a World Tour fan, name at least 3 of their events.
Me? Kona Peach Day Open, La Mirada Open, no, European Open. I love Disc Golf World Tour.
Well, yeah, you were at one of their events.
No. I was at the announcement, USDGC. They
was the Australian Open not a World Tour event?
It was 2017. Oh, might have been.
You had like a sticker that says, I thought it said.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I was at a World Tour
event. You don't even know where you were. You're such a big fan.
It was a major. Australian Open was a major. So I don't even know if it wasn't just a World Tour event. It was a major.
That is part of it, though.
I have a Disc Golf World Tour hat. I got the Australian Open flag.
Biggest World Tour fan right here.
Could be.
Biggest.
Making money. I got to get my keys to give them the other two. Nate, my keys are on my desk, and two of those chairs are in the back of my trunk.
Okay. Grip locked.
Grip locked. Or we go on tangents. Anyways, yeah. Paul did come back from 5 strokes on Rick there.
Yeah.
End up winning by 2. So it was a 7-stroke total.
Maybe we should make sure that people know about
anyways,
that.
What did you think about the play style in today's field where, like,
yeah,
your finish at 11th means way more today than it did, like, in 2015 or 2017?
Yeah.
A win versus 11, like 11th versus 27th. Yeah. It was like, man.
Well, Paul donates all his winnings.
Yes.
Not to say that he doesn't care about
charity. What does that mean, Trevor?
No, I'm just saying he also makes $1 million guaranteed every year. So he doesn't care about 11th versus 27th.
Correct.
And that is very much the old school Paul mentality for sure of, I'm either going to charge into this thing and try to take it, or I'm losing ugly and who cares? And because that's what I'm saying, like blowing up on those last two holes, I don't think he cares about that. You know,
yeah.
He knows the style that he was playing and what it was potentially going to cost him. I think that all signs are looking great for him right now because he's figuring out things in his game and he's showing flashes that we haven't seen in a while where it's like there are times where Paul looks like Paul and man, I hope it can just, like, things are really heading, like, in a great direction as we approach Worlds in August. And, oh, my gosh, would it just be great.
Well, because Paul was...
if he could get in contention.
Before those last two holes, Paul was 10 under through 14 in that final round.
He
reminder,
was cooking.
The course record was set that round by Joseph Anderson at 13.
He was cooking.
So he had a very solid chance because 18 was eagleable. And the reason he bogeyed 16 is he was the only player I saw all weekend run the drop zone putt.
Yeah.
And it went in the water.
Yeah.
So, like, that was... he was the only, so he was trying to save his 3 because he was in that like my foot's to the floor mentality.
Is he going out west?
Let's take a look at Paul's upcoming events here.
We're about to have some interesting events because obviously we have a week. Or is he going straight?
He goes OTB, Portland, Beaver State Preserve.
Yeah.
Then he goes over Swedish Open, Crokul Open, European Open, European Disc Golf Festival. Then he comes back beginning of August for Ledgestone.
So don't even. I would be not counting him out to win one.
No, he's definitely heating up at the right time of the season for him. I think.
And you know, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about Worlds, but
yeah,
he's just gearing up for European Open.
European Open. I mean, we could. It's not unrealistic to think that he could be in contention or win Worlds and or European Open and or USDGC.
Well, I would say it's not unrealistic to think that he wins in the next, you know, couple months, 3 months. He wins 3 Pro Tours and 2 Majors.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. I just wanted to, I know people are
that
already like,
awesome.
Like, oh my gosh, here they go about Paul. So I just wanted to really pile it on.
That would definitely put AB back in sun mode.
Yeah.
If Paul brought it off 3 Pro Tour and 2
I'm gonna
majors.
I'm going to have to add that to the, like, the is Paul back meter that I tweet out sometimes. Like, like the final one is like, AB is your son again. Or
yeah.
Something like that.
That's funny. Definitely.
Sorry,
Anthony. People could start calling AB Little Macbeth again if that happened.
Oh, my gosh, bro.
Anything else surprising you on this leaderboard? I only have, like, one thing from it, but I didn't know if you saw anything.
Not in particular. Once I mentioned earlier, but Gavin Rathbun, I'm really happy for the golf he's been playing this year.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, first off, Kevin Jones let me down as dark horse. My dark horse pick
didn't show up to the event, so
I do win that.
Yeah, you
at
do
least
win.
Okay. Well, this might be the first time a dark horse pick coming in 68th has won someone.
Didn't check on Adam Hammes, and turns out he did not go.
That's tough.
So that's
tough. That's a tough
scene. Yeah, it's tough.
Very tough scene for you. But the one thing I wanted to bring up that I thought was interesting is Nico LaCastro played the first two rounds, then DNF'd for round 3, right? But it wasn't your typical DNF. He got 888'd, which is the first time I've seen this at a Pro Tour.
That
which
means
is,
he quit.
So an 888 means
no injury.
An 888 is when a, no, not even no injury. An 888 is just when a player has not notified the TD that they will not be playing the next scheduled round. Or you can enter an 888 when a player has been confirmed to have manipulated their score or dropped out to preserve their rating.
Well, he would have a PDGA sanction. We could probably track down.
Most likely, it's just that he did not notify the TD he was dropping out. What does an 888 mean over a 999? In today's game, not that much, because an 888 just triggers a penalty where it lowers the player's overall rating up to 5 points for a 6-month period. So his overall rating will just get lowered. Not that big of a deal. I was just scrolling down and I was just like, oh, Eagle DN or Nico DNF, and then I saw 888 and then I saw everyone else with 999 and I was like,
probably just
wonder what happened
away.
There. Most likely, I'm assuming he, because he did, it's not like he blew up the second round.
Did Eagle play this event?
Eagle did not.
No, yeah, we knew he was taking
a
break.
Next week. But yeah, most likely he just forgot to text the TD or something like that, but it was interesting. A little manufacturer's cup update before we get into Trevor's trivia. We have Discraft still holding on to the lead, but scored third most points this week. This is the first time since week three that they were not the leader in points. Innova led the weekly scoring solely on Calvin's win. First winner in 2024 that's not from Discraft or Discmania. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Gannon's second place finish makes him the only player to finish in top 10 all seven events this year. And Joey Bucket's fourth place finish propelled Castplast up from 10th place to 8th, passing Mitt and DGA. So we
who
now
is
have
Mason with right now.
Mason Ford?
No, Marchbanks.
Marchbanks Millennium.
It's Millennium, that's right.
Yeah. Gavin Rathbun came in third and scored points for no one as he's unsponsored. So it's interesting.
That's
other
crazy.
Fact.
Somebody's
but
gotta pick him up, man.
You've got Discraft in the lead, 50 points clear of Discmania. Then you have Innova in third, 108 points behind second. Then you have Dynamic, Prodigy, MVP, Westside, Castaplast now in 8th, Mint in 9th, and DGA in 10th. Trevor, fan favorite segment, what's up with Trevor's trivia today?
Okay, today I think
what's
could be,
up with Trevor's
what's
trivia?
What's up with it, dude?
I think this could be pretty fun.
No, like, this is an intervention.
This is kind of like a newlywed style game. You guys, if you guys have ever seen the newlyweds game where you're trying to like guess what each other would say. So it's kind of like that, except we are going to have, I'm going to have prompts. Okay. I'll give you an example.
Well, I'm getting married and I'm going to prom.
Let me give you an example of one of the prompts. One of the first prompts. Some of them are about, some of them are more subjective than others, but they're all somewhat subjective. That's kind of the point. It's not a trivia game. It's a I know what the other person would say to this prompt.
Okay,
game.
Okay.
So the first one, for example, is this is the most iconic Innova disc. Everyone needs one in the bag. This is a pretty easy one to start with. But here's how it's gonna go though. Listen, you haven't heard the twist.
Okay.
What's the twist?
You guys are gonna say it at the same time, but Hunter is merely trying to guess what Connor is thinking.
Yes.
So the way you're playing this game, it's not going to go back and forth. It is always going to be Connor. You say what actually is in your heart.
And I'm just guessing.
And you are trying to think
so
as Connor.
This is just Hunter knows Connor.
Dang it. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm still going to say my honorable mention of what Hunter's is afterwards for this first one because I know it.
Okay.
Okay. This is the most iconic Innova disc. Everyone needs one in the bag. 3, 2, 1.
Rock. Yeah.
Okay. Hunter's was a destroyer.
No, I would have said rock.
Really?
Okay. Iconic.
I think in the name, in the game, I think you would have said it, but I wanted to put that one in there because originally I was designing it to where you would both say what you would think, and I thought you guys would say it wrong. But anyways, okay. Next prompt. 1 for 1. Good job.
I'm scared.
Something's
going to make me look stupid.
Not always the most popular disc manufacturer, but the last few years have put them near to the near the top due to some great signings. Let me know when you're ready.
I know I'm right.
No conversing, by the way.
No.
Yeah, I won't. I would never.
You would never.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Dynamic. MVP. Really? Really?
Dynamic? What? Dynamic?
Connor.
I thought like Discraft was the trap in there. Kinda.
Discraft?
Well, like they signed Paul like it's
7 years
time.
Ago. Remember we discussed that?
Well, what did dude? What?
I just was saying because Ricky.
When, how long ago was that?
But Ricky was with Latitude.
That was only like 3
that.
Years ago. Oh, I don't. Man. I'm sorry. I forgot that MVP existed.
Okay. The rest. Of
wow, that was stupid.
The rest of these are more like personal, subjective ones. They're less to do with the disc golf industry. So
yeah, then I won't
be
as embarrassed.
Okay. When it comes to putters, I see these ones on the course more than any other.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. Okay.
They're gonna start getting. They're gonna. They're going to start getting pretty typical. I want these to be hard.
Okay, give me a second. Everybody I know puts with a different putter. Okay. I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
Luna. AVR.
I think I probably would have gone Luna, but AVR.
I see a lot of people putt with Lunas. Everybody putts with something different now.
Yeah, there's a lot of putters out there.
One for three.
Maybe I see a lot of people putt with the Judge.
The next one, this one's very difficult. The best number of discs to have in your bag as an experienced player is?
I have it.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
25.
Dang. That was close. That would have been impressive. Okay, here's the next one.
Let's have an eighth of a point there?
Yeah, an eighth.
Okay, cool.
Okay, nice. You have one and an eighth. If I'm recommending a first driver to a new player, I look no further than...
I have no idea.
I mean, I know my answer.
Okay, I got it. I know what he's going to say.
3, 2, 1.
Diamond.
Yes!
Yes, Hunter. Nice job.
I locked in.
I knew you were there. I knew you would, right, you would read my mind on that one.
This is a good one. If I need to recommend a course to someone visiting Lynchburg and they're just looking to have a fun time, I would say go play.
Okay. Okay.
Tough one for Connor.
I'm locked in. I think I know what he's going to land on.
Can I have a follow-up question?
No. No, that's the problem.
Just get there. You
got
this.
Just looking to have a fun time.
Yeah.
Just having a fun time. Okay, I'm there.
3, 2, 1.
Tim Brook. Yeah, I knew you'd get there. Nice. I knew you'd get there.
I really probably would. I probably.
I think it's one of
you. Well, your honor mention would have been 3, 2, 1. New Sandusky.
Shorts. Oh, shoot.
I thought Falling Creek might make it on somebody.
We could have really been there, Colin.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job. 2 and 1/8 so far. The ideal water bottle size for the disc golf bag is.
All right.
Okay, I got it.
Like, we're talking fluid ounces or like.
Yeah, ounces.
3, 2, 1.
32.
Nice!
I don't think there's another answer.
I just like to find
as much as I can fit in my Pioneer.
I think it's fun. Okay, this would be a tough one. The perfect temperature to play disc golf in is?
Oh, no. Okay, okay.
Okay, all right. I got it.
3, 2, 1.
75. Wow.
What did he say?
We both said 75.
He said 75?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
You guys are on one right
now.
Well,
I was thinking 72, but I was like, it's going to have to be a like 70, 75,
yeah.
80.
Yeah.
So I said 75.
Yeah. Wow, this has been really good. 4 and 1/8 point.
Wow. I think I might be losing the essence of the game because I am answering what I'm answering, but I'm also trying to answer what I think Hunter would answer for me as well.
So. Hey, fair enough.
Hey, we're doing great.
Yeah, we're doing a great job.
Don't change anything.
Okay. The easiest disc color to find in the woods is by far.
Okay.
We'll make it easy.
Oh, okay.
Just stick to. We'll make it easy and just stick to like a color.
Yeah,
you don't
okay.
have to say like
it.
Neon or anything like that. 3, 2, 1.
Pink.
Oh, man. All right, last one. This one's pretty easy. It's like 50-50. If given the choice of playing in 25-mile-per-hour winds or light rain, I would choose...
I think I know where he's going to get to.
This is to go... Like,
okay, I have my answer. I have my answer.
3, 2, 1.
Rain. Yeah.
There you go.
The wind just beat you down.
Man, yeah, you guys struggled early there, but
the rain
finished very strong.
With rain, you kind of like rally your friends.
Well, it's
like,
also
yeah,
only
like
light rain.
Like rain round. Yeah. That's fun.
I thought about saying
and
moderate
plus, like,
rain.
One of his most fond memories is being shirtless in the rain.
Playing disc golf.
Playing disc golf.
Stung by
a
hornet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That doesn't happen in the wind.
Favorite memory.
Yeah, it doesn't happen in the wind.
That's a good try. Good point. Good point.
All right, we've got to tackle this top 10 here.
Here's the good news about our top 10 is
we are have to factor in Champions Cup. And DDO.
That's going to be a nightmare. The good news is, though, I feel like our top 10 boys have been playing well.
Yeah.
So there might be a little shaking, but there shouldn't be a ton of having to move people
Let's
in.
Let's start it off here with, we have AB at number 1, came in 14th this week. Do we still like that there?
The question is, who would challenge
The only
him?
Challenger would be Gannon Burr.
If Gannon's played the last two events better, which he hasn't, though, he didn't play better.
Champions well, there's also Cup. One win versus 3.
Well, right, but I don't think anybody's going to challenge.
No,
AB.
I don't think so. I think AB Gannon 1-2.
I think
were
Calvin
golden.
Is going to jump pretty significantly and get close up there, but
no.
He'll probably be the next guy to challenge. For
number
that spot.
3, we have Niklas Antola currently,
and he just
he
left
did not
Europe.
Play Dynamic Disc Open.
That's what I'm saying. So Niklas is going to start sliding, I think.
But he did come second at Champions Cup,
right? But so maybe that's enough for this week to kind of hold his position.
I like that,
but he'll start to slide.
Okay, now we have Ricky Wysocki in fourth. Came in fifth place.
Yeah.
He has rattled off and third at Champions Cup. He's went third, third, fifth in his three most recent events.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
I feel like I'm fine with Ricky staying there. I don't think he did anything.
Everybody's been really good.
I don't feel like he did anything to jump Niklas yet.
It's so hard, but I think he's okay here. The guys at the top are so good right now. I think that four.
This is where I think things are going to get interesting. We have Kyle Kline next, who came in 16th.
Yeah, he played.
He's recently Jonesboro on. He went 27th, didn't play MCO, 17th at Champions Cup, 16th.
So
he's going to.
So Calvin is at least getting past him.
Yes, Chris Dickerson is in between Calvin and him. So I think what we have to do is determine between Chris Dickerson and Calvin Heimberg who is taking fifth.
Oh, it's got
to
be.
In my opinion, I think both players jump Kyle Kline.
I think I don't even need to look at it because Calvin just got the win. I think he's got to
go. Okay, so we go
fifth.
Calvin Heimberg. Do we want to just let's just look at Kyle Kline to Chris Dickerson? But I think recent history is going to point to Dickerson. Might help if I actually click Kyle Kline.
Might.
Okay, let's see here. Dickerson's 4-3 against him on the season, and recently he hasn't lost to him. Jonesboro.
Yeah,
Dickerson hasn't finished outside the top 10.
Dickerson's very
since
good.
Chess.com. He's only finished out of the top 10 once.
He's kind of a Matty O lately, where he's living in like that 5-10 range just the whole time.
All right, so
it's incredible.
Whoops.
His top 10 is so strong right now. It is
so Dickerson's
insane.
In at sixth. Kyle Kline at seventh. We have Cole Rodolin at eighth. I don't think we're going to like that.
Because he was sneaky. Wasn't he sneaky?
He did not play DDO. He came in 26th at Champions Cup.
Maybe he hasn't been that sneaky.
But before then, he was 26th, 15th, 6th, 20th, 13th, and then came 26th and didn't play.
That's not terrible.
The one behind him is Simon Lazat.
Who's also probably about to slip because he's going to be gone.
Simon Lazat has not played Champions Cup or DDO.
He's going to be out for a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we gave Simon his flowers because he had the win, but he probably just needs to leave the top.
So now we have Ezra Robinson.
Do we give Simon residency at the bottom of the top 10 until he comes back, just knowing that he's probably a top 10 guy when he comes back?
Let's look at Ezra Robinson compared to Cole Rodolin.
Schools of thought
here. Ezra Robinson's 4-3 against Cole Rodolin on the season. So I think Ezra Robinson needs to jump at least to Cole Rodolin.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
So
that might be the play.
We now have, and I do think we should probably.
Like, do we just let Simon sit in the 10 spot till he comes back?
That's fine. I'm fine with that.
I think we have to.
We need to just do some looksy-peeksy here.
Oh, I like it.
Who is missing? Andrew Presnell. First place, fifth place, back-to-back weeks.
Yeah.
Do we.
I kind of like putting him in there in ninth.
Let's look at Rodolin versus. Let's look at Rodolin versus Presnell.
Gotta respect the major win in a back-to-back fifth. Like, that's
Presnell's 2-4 against Rodolin on the season, but Champions Cup win, and then he came fifth
and
at DDO.
He hasn't been bad.
And he hasn't. I mean, he came 50th at Jonesboro. He's went 17th, first, fifth last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
This is a power ranking. It's all about our gut. My gut says I like Presnell more than Cole Rodolin
like
right now.
Prez for Prez right now.
Presnell.
Wow. Never thought he was going to be in the top 10.
Anyone we're missing above him? I think that we have the same 10 people in our top 10. Matty O is the only one that's not.
Yeah, but he got
crushed. He went 21st
he took like
at DDO.
Or whatever.
Yeah, he took a 45th at Waco.
I think that's
81st
the 10.
At Music City.
I think that's the 10.
I think
right
that's
there.
The 10. I think it's a, and Joseph it's a, Anderson's the only other one that we could talk.
He's outside looking
but
in
he went
right now.
6th, 4th most recently to Presnell's first fifth.
He's first five out. He's first five
out. I think Joseph Anderson's on the board there. Now, I think. We got to look at Evelina Salonen has won a major since we updated this. Owen Scoggins has lost 2 weeks in a row. Missy Gannon has just won. Right now we have Kristen, Owen, Missy. Owen and Missy are tied for second. Holland, Evelina.
And Evelina won a major and dipped. Is she coming back?
She will at some point.
But like when? That's what I'm saying. Like if she's going to be gone for like 3 weeks, then it's like why even bother bumping her up a ton? But if she's going to come right back for Portland.
She is back. She's not back. We won't see her until the Crokul Open
in July.
Well, because she's playing the Copenhagen Open this weekend, Turku Open, Swedish.
We can't do
we won't have
about
her on
it.
The U.S. soil until
that's
Worlds.
What I'm saying. I think we probably hold her, but like we hold her where she is at five, but like moving her up, I think is going to be pointless.
Yeah. Okay. So do we think we just take Owen, move her to third, have Missy second, and that's it?
That looks pretty good because Holland played well. I mean, unless we probably should compare Holland and Owen because I think there could be something there. Maybe, maybe not.
Head-to-head, FPO.
Let's just make sure, though. Excellent.
Okay. Handley. to Scoggins.
Scoggins.
Compare owns 5-4 against
her. What about
her?
The last like three?
Pretty close. Pretty similar.
Pretty close. Yeah, okay. It's probably fine where it is.
Yeah, I think we're fine here. Okay, so FPO, we have Kristen 1, Missy 2, Own 3, Holland 4, Evelina 5.
Sounds good.
There you go. All right, let's do a little Silas.
I feel better about these than I have in a while. It's good. Those are good power rankings.
Let's do this before Silas selects. You might have seen on Instagram that the Charleston store, Foundation Charleston, did announce they're closing their door. Their doors, I wanted to just give a statement from Griplock's audience to you all from our end. So basically what it came down to, because there wasn't a lot of information in that final post. You might not even have seen it. You might not even know we had a Charleston store. But Avery and the team down there decided to close it. More or less, Charleston is a very expensive location to run a disc golf store, to put it lightly. And with the increased cost, uncertainty of the future of courses nearest them, paired with the opportunity they had to negotiate their lease, the management of the Charleston store made the decision to close their doors. We worked with them, trying to find a low-risk solution, but none seemed to really work for all parties. So this, unfortunately, was the best option. With that being said, though, Avery, who's the owner down there of the shop, is just as passionate about disc golf as ever and plans to keep running events and staying involved in the local scene down there. And we are going to continue to work with him and support him and his endeavors down there however we can. So we will still have a presence in the Charleston area, but it just wasn't realistic or sustainable to keep a disc golf store open down there, unfortunately. So if you're planning to swing by the store at some point in the future, unfortunately, that it is closed. So you can still support their events and stuff going on down there. Like I said, a lot of ones playing. I think the Battle for Pines is coming up relatively soon. So that'll be electric. But
I want a Park Circle event.
Yeah. Now, Silas selects.
In the Mott's box.
End of a shark. End of a shark.
All right, Con, shark.
Interesting. Oh, because we've been talking a lot about sharks. He's going for that, like...
I'm not...
Oh,
I'm thinking about, there's a lot of sharks out there right now.
I was giving you some credit. I think he went in so quick that I feel like he didn't even reach behind anything to grab something.
Dude, don't try to get in Silas's head, man. It's a scary.
I'm following
place
Silas.
In there.
I'm walking outside. I'm walking outside. I'm going over to the desk.
I'm so tall.
Yeah, I'm really
tall. It's
really
raining
tall.
At my head, but it's dry at
my head
feet.
On a lightning bolt.
I want to arrive.
I'm going to take an inner core.
This is crazy, dude.
Oh!
It's an alien.
Oh my
we
gosh,
even I had
dude.
Such a good feeling
so
about it this
close.
Week. I thought I got it. I had such a good
we
feeling.
We weren't even close.
Dang. Whenever I was thinking
dude,
shark,
Silas
I was thinking
so
like a shark on another planet.
So
dog,
how does he know?
How does he do it?
How does he know what we're going to do and guess and do something different?
I was like
time.
Sensing, I was
he's
like
incredible.
Sensing like not on ground, not on ground.
You know,
but
honestly,
I was thinking ocean, but it was actually out of
dang
it. Honestly, the alien's a phenomenal disc to use foundation care on. Very weird disc. You know, fun to throw, unique. You might be kind of scared to
fly's
buy it.
Really nice.
But you
fly's
won't
great.
Want to commit to it.
Yeah, it's a terrifying one to commit to an online purchase of. But now with Foundation Care, if you're in the U.S., you ain't got to. Head to foundationdisc.com, and we'll see you in the next episode of Griplock.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.